Hey, Qualifiers listeners, guys and gals, this is your host, M. Mauricio, that's me, and this is episode number 56 of Unqualified News. Gemini season over, Cancer season passed, and Leo season's here. I had somebody ask me, why are you always mentioning horoscopes? Like, you believe in that so much? I'm like, I don't believe in anything 100%. Let's start there. But I feel like at the point in time of my life right now, I'm looking for help even in the stars right now. On episode 56, there is four articles I have here, CNN.com, and there's another Maya city in the jungles of Mexico by the Yucatan Peninsula from the 600-900 AD era, that old late classic Maya period. $50 billion, 50 billies, that's how much of a settlement all the pharmaceutical companies had to shell out. And there's an article from marketplace.org talking about who and how some of this money is going to be distributed to help the opioid crisis. Some of this money's already been out and distributed. Some states are openly saying how they're spending the money. Some states are not. You can look up if your state is one of those states that is openly saying where the money's going. But I'll tell you this right now, California, we ain't saying shit. They're keeping the money. Who knows where the money's going? Because I looked it up. I have an update on Myanmar and Aung San Suu Kyi. I haven't brought up Ms. Suu Kyi in a while, and that's because there really hasn't been any information. She was in solitary confinement for the past year, just finally got released, and is now on house arrest. She's a 78-year-old fucking rebel. Man, I've been following Ms. Suu Kyi for a while, and she's 78 years old, and just hope everything's good with her. China keeps sending weapons, quote unquote, to Russia. It's not really weapons. What they're sending is things like parts, right? Parts for their armor vest, parts for their machines, things like that. Things that now the Russians don't have to spend on. So, and they're buying more Russian oil. This article is very small. It's from businessinsider.com, but this is going to be an ongoing issue for the years to come on whether China was helping Russia, and we're over here trying to help Ukraine. So it's like, really, we're fighting each other here, but we're not really saying it. It's a toughie. It's a toughie, qualifiers. Laser mapping reveals a forgotten Maya city in the jungle. This one, guys and gals, is by Katie Hunt from CNN.com. 3-4 hour flights high above the jungles of Campeche on Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula exposed a hidden gem on the ground below. A lost city that was likely abandoned more than 1,000 years ago. It was all in a day's work for Juan Carlos Fernandez Diaz, an assistant professor in civil engineering at the University of Houston, who spotted the city in March during an airborne archaeological survey of the area. For the past decade, he's been a trailblazer in the archaeological application of LIDAR, airborne light detection and ranging equipment that can find structures obscured by dense tree canopies and other vegetation. Relics that in some cases reveal traces left by a lost civilization. Archaeologists subsequently surveyed the site, which they've named Ocomtum, for 6 weeks in May and June, and found 50-foot-tall structures resembling pyramids, pottery, and engravings that they believe date back to between 600 and 900 AD, known as the late classic period in Maya civilization. When we see the LIDAR images, we can see that there's something amazing, but the real discovery happens after a lot of investigation and exploration, said Fernandez Diaz, who is also the co-investigator at the National Center for Airborne Laser Mapping. While LIDAR revealed the location of structures, archaeologist Ivan Spreich, a researcher at the Slovenian Academy of Sciences and Arts, ZRZ, ZAZU, still faced an enormous hurdle when he and his team went to survey the area. Okomtun's peculiar features. Unused tracks and roads got them fairly close to the site, but the researchers had to hack their way through thick jungle using machetes and chainsaws to cut down trees and slash through other vegetation to reach what Sprige describes as a major site. "When we got there, we saw that the buildings were truly massive," he said. Maya civilization is best known for its pyramid temples and impressive stone structures that have been found across southern Mexico, Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, and El Salvador. Sprige and his team found three plazas complete with large buildings and a bog game field. He said that the city resembles other Maya cities from the same period, but there are certain peculiar features. For example, we have several very curious architecture complexes of structures which are arranged in almost concentric circles. So we are only guessing what this could be, perhaps marketplaces, he said. During the six-week survey, Sprige and his colleagues conducted archaeological reconnaissance and dug a 2-meter by 2-meter test pit, and the pottery fragments they found helped them understand the age of this site. They plan to return next year for further investigation. Transformative technique. Remote sensing technology, first used in archaeology at the turn of the century, has revolutionized the field, particularly for researchers working in densely forested areas that are difficult to explore on foot, such as those in Central America, Sprige said. "We can now practically see through vegetation," he said. "From an airplane, or in some cases a drone, a LiDAR sensor tracks the amount of time each laser pulse takes to return and uses that information to create a three-dimensional map of the environment below. The simplest analogy is like playing tennis, you know. You basically throw a ball to the wall and see the ball come back and basically measure the time it takes to go to the wall and come back. And because it's a laser, it's traveling at the speed of light," Fernandez Diaz explained. He's mapped more than 20,000 square kilometers of Central American jungle and been involved in 45 archaeological projects, including the discovery of the largest and oldest Maya temple near Tabasco, Mexico, and tens of thousands of Maya structures and settlements in the Guatemalan jungle. Understanding sites like these can shed light on the origins of the cities and community life and whether large construction projects in the past required the support of powerful elites and centralized authority of some kind. In the case of the newly discovered city, though, many questions remain unanswered. Unraveling Okomtun. It could take years to fully excavate Okomtun and get a deeper understanding of the site and why it was abandoned. Many once densely populated settlements, particularly in the southern and central Yucatan Peninsula, were abandoned in the space of about 200 years in the 9th and 10th centuries, he said. Sprige said people left these cities for a combination of reasons: soil depletion, overpopulation, depression, prolonged drought, and warfare. But the researchers don't know which was the main cause or the sequence of events. While LiDAR saves time in the research process, in some cases, one day in the air can replace a lifetime's work of an archaeologist on the ground. Sprige says the work he pursues still costly. He raised funds from 7 different institutions and companies to fund the fieldwork, including 4 Slovenian businesses. Publisher Jaluz Parrokus Klet, transport company Adria Kombi, lender Kreditna Druzhba Luzhbana, and travel agency Al Ars Longa, and 2 US-based organizations, Ken and Julie Jones Charitable Foundation and Milwaukee Audubon Society, as well as his own institution, ZRC Zazu. Despite the thrill of discovery, Fernandez Diaz said it's not glamorous work. There are no live images to check during the flight, nor is there a bathroom on board the tiny plane. It's a bit like mowing the lawn, going one direction, turning around in a parallel direction, and repeating that back and forth to get the coverage we want, he said. And there you have it, qualifiers. That's from CNN.com. And every day that goes by, there's more Maya City that gets discovered through this LiDAR technique. It's incredibly interesting to me. I love the Maya civilization, especially this era, this late classic period Maya era, they call it. I like that style. A lot of it is being found in the jungles of Guatemala, El Salvador. A lot in Guatemala, though. And it's very, very exciting. Years ago, early episodes of Unqualified News, I brought up the Mayan cities that were being found through LiDAR. I will keep bringing them up because they still keep discovering new Maya cities. And that's pretty exciting for those Central American countries' economy. Where will the opioid settlement money go? This one qualifiers is from marketplace.org by Ellen Rolls. While all the beauty and the bloodshed focused on Purdue Pharma and the Sackler family, many companies have been held liable for their part in fueling the opioid epidemic. The value of proposed and finalized settlements exceeds $50 billion, the majority of which will go to municipalities, states, and tribal organizations. $50 billion may seem like a lot, but the opioid epidemic has cost the U.S. economy trillions, not to mention the physical and emotional toll on victims, survivors, and families. How much money has already been paid out? Since last year, more than $3 billion of the settlement money has gone to cities, counties, and states. But the firm administering the funds, Brown Greer, has kept the precise amount sent to each locality private. KFF Health News released documents today that show the exact amounts allocated in 2022 and so far in 2023, according to a national summary created by Brown Greer. These records only account for funds distributed by Brown Greer. KFF Health News noted that some states' data sets are not available because those states were not part of national settlement agreements, had unique settlement terms, or opted not to have their payments distributed via Brown Greer. What will this money be used for? Most settlements require at least 85% of payouts to be used for opioid abatement or projects that directly treat, prevent, or reduce the harms associated with opioid misuse. Within that limitation, states and cities have a lot of flexibility in the strategies or projects they choose. So far, few state and local governments have reported exactly how they plan to use it. There is no guarantee that these bankruptcy settlement funds will be used well. There is a long track record of investments, not only in things that don't work, but sometimes that are counterproductive, said Dr. Joshua Sharfstein, a vice dean and professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. It's really important that if you're going to spend $50 billion to reduce the enormous burden of the overdose epidemic, which is still killing 100,000 people each year in this country, we have to do things differently. Sharfstein's concerns stem from previous settlements with tobacco companies amounting to $246 billion. States devoted very little of those payments to public health initiatives meant to address and reduce tobacco use. Unlike the opioid settlements, states could use the tobacco settlement money for any purpose. Transparency is key. Disclosure could help to ensure the money is well spent. As of June 6, 15 states have promised to publicly report 100% of their settlement expenditures, while 18 states have committed to report a portion of their spending and 17 have not committed to reporting anything at all. That's according to research by Christine Minhee, founder of the Opioid Settlement Tracker, which aims to discover how much of the settlement money is spent to bolster the public health response to drug use, as her website puts it. And there it is, listeners, that's from marketplace.org. And there was a big giant settlement from all the pharmaceutical companies that are killing our youth, killing our everybody. It doesn't matter what you are, old, young, black, green, yellow, whatever color skin you are, everybody's dying from opioids. And there's been a $50 billion settlement. But like this article said, $50 billion is really nothing compared to the trillions of dollars of damage that, you know, opioids have caused to America and to the people, to the families. I wanted to shed some light on this article because I had not heard about no $50 billion settlement, that's for sure, on the news, nowhere really. And there isn't really a lot of articles that talk about it because they don't have to. It's so much money being funneled from pharmaceutical companies now to politicians. And this is in plain sight. And, you know, to track all that money, it's going to be a toughie. As the article said, some of this money's already been used in some states. Maybe you've seen the news or you've seen some TikTok videos, those like little trucks, you know, or little carts that are dispensing syringes and things like that. Those are the things that this money is being used for. Now that certain states have more money, they are thinking ways to use it to help the opioid epidemic. And just so you know, certain states think that that's a good idea. Just so you know. Myanmar Aung San Suu Kyi moved out of jail to house arrest. This article is from BBC.com by Francis Mao out of BBC Singapore. Ms. Suu Kyi was taken to a government building in Nay Pi Taw on Monday. Prison sources told BBC Burmese she'd spent a year in solitary confinement. The 78-year-old is serving a 33-year sentence after being jailed in a closed-door military-run trials. Almost no news has emerged about her condition in more than 2 years. There has been no confirmation from the military of her transfer from jail, but the move to house arrest could be a positive sign for authorities, who have faced numerous calls to release the country's democratically elected leader. Ms. Suu Kyi was rumored to have been ill, but the military has denied the reports. Earlier this week, a source from the Nay Pi Taw prison where she was being held told BBC Burmese that she was in good health. Thailand's foreign minister also revealed this month that he had visited Ms. Suu Kyi. However, he disclosed no further detail. The military has arranged a meeting between Ms. Suu Kyi and Thi Khun Myat, the Speaker of the Lower House of Parliament, BBC Burmese reported. However, the military has denied these talks are taking place. Since the coup, Myanmar has spiraled into a civil war, which has killed thousands of people. Sanctions imposed on the military have failed to stop the violence. The 78-year-old Nobel laureate was under house arrest until June this year, when she was moved to a solitary confinement prison in the country's capital. She denies all of the accusations and writes, "Groups have condemned the court trials as a sham." The daughter of independence hero General Aung San, she emerged as a leader of the pro-democracy movement against the military dictatorship. She co-founded the National League of Democracy, NLD, but was put under house arrest in 1989. Awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, Ms. Suu Kyi was one of the world's leading democracy icons. Her release from detention in 2010 was celebrated in Myanmar and around the world, but she was later criticized for defending her country against allegations of genocide at the UN International Court of Justice, ICJ, after widespread claims that Myanmar had committed atrocities against Muslim Rohingya while her government was in power. Nearly a million of them have fled Myanmar in recent years and now live as refugees in neighboring Bangladesh. And that is from BBC.com from Myanmar. Just a little update on Miss Aung San Suu Kyi. If you haven't heard the episodes in the past or you haven't heard who she is, she was elected president of Myanmar, and just kind of like it was here, right? Where there was the left and the right, and the right said, nope, you didn't win. And the left's like, wait, yes, we did. And no, you didn't. Yes, you did. So the same thing happened in Myanmar, but over there, I'm not sure which is the left or the right, but let's say that the right is the people that the military, right? And the left is Aung San Suu Kyi. So Aung San Suu Kyi won the left, and the right, the military, said, no, you didn't. And in Myanmar, the military went on into a military coup, went, took her out of office, put her in jail, basically took everybody out of office that they didn't want, and is now currently in a civil war. We're really doing nothing about it, and it's not really on the news. There's thousands of people dying, but there's so many other things happening, right? Ever since I found out that they overthrew the government like that, it's just been something that it was stuck in my brain, because during the time when they overthrew the government there in Myanmar, that was when the Trump people, the Trumpies, I guess, as people call them, they were saying, you know, the election was stolen. There was a possibility that, you know, that could have possibly happened here, but there's too many people here with guns, you know, and in Myanmar, that's not the case. So it's just something that I'm still going to keep following. And now it seems like she's on house arrest, still not the leader, but they're treating her with respect, it seems. So I really love that. She's a 78-year-old lady. She's a grandma probably, and it sucks that she's being treated like this at the ends of her life, you know. China is sending enough military gear, including drones, to Russia to equip an army, thanks to a loophole in the West's attempts to stop Putin's war machine, report says. This one, guys and gals, is from BusinessInsider.com by Shania Baker. China has sent Russia enough military equipment to outfit an army, using loopholes in Western sanctions over Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Politico reported. Politico, using evidence such as customs records, reported that Chinese manufacturers were delivering significant quantities of equipment to help Russia in its fight against Ukraine. This includes enough protective gear to equip many of the troops Russia has mobilized for its invasion, as well as drones that can direct artillery fire and drop grenades to Ukrainian forces. Chinese manufacturers have also sent thermal optical sights that can target soldiers at night, the report said. Overall, Russia has imported more than $100 million worth of drones from China since the start of this year, as well as $225 million in ceramics, which can be used in body armor, a 69% increase over 2022, Politico reported. Chinese companies are exploiting a loophole to send this equipment. The gear is considered non-lethal and seen as dual use, which means it can have civilian as well as military applications. This leaves Western authorities with an excuse if they don't want to confront China on the issue, Politico reported. China has repeatedly denied sending military equipment to Russia since it launched its full-scale invasion of Ukraine in February 2022. But Ukraine said earlier this year that it was finding a growing number of Chinese parts in Russian weapons that it captured, including drones and tanks. And U.S. intelligence documents obtained by the Washington Post in April show that China approved the provisions of lethal aid to Russia earlier this year and planned to send military equipment disguised as civilian equipment. The U.S. said it had not seen any evidence that China had given Russia weapons or lethal aid. The custom records obtained by Politico showed Russian buyers declaring orders for hundreds of thousands of bulletproof vests and helmets made by a company called Shanghai H-Win. Russia has been struggling with equipment shortages, with mobilized soldiers saying they had to buy their own body armor, and a Russian soldier complaining in an intercepted phone call that his unit had no ammunition and were given just one grenade each to blow themselves up. The UK Ministry of Defense said in March that Russian soldiers in the city of Bakhmut, Ukraine, were likely forced into close quarters fighting because they didn't have enough artillery ammunition. And in June, Russian President Vladimir Putin acknowledged that his troops didn't have enough equipment, including high-precision ammunition, communications equipment, aircraft, drones, and so on. China is officially neutral and has tried to position itself as a prospective peacemaker that can broker a deal. But it has also expanded its dealings with Russia since the invasion began, including through state visits, trade, and more purchases of Russian oil. It also hasn't stopped military exercises with Russia. Helena Legarda, an expert in Chinese defense and foreign policy at the German think tank Mercator Institute for China Studies, told Politico, "What is very clear is that China, for all its claims that it is a neutral actor, is, in fact, supporting Russia's position in this war. Ukraine is also a customer of Chinese weapons, though Politico reported that its imports of many types of Chinese equipment had plummeted this year." And there it is, qualifiers. That is from businessinsider.com on China being the backing behind Russia and the U.S. being the backing behind Ukraine. Oh, well, I mean, that's not what they're saying here in the article, but that's literally what's happening here. So just want to make a couple points that just I have to say, because I can't go on with without without mentioning. If we're backing Ukraine and we're sending them equipment made in the good old US of A, and Russia is getting equipment from China, come on, bro. Come on, bro. Who do you think is going to win? All right. Also, could it have not had more of a obvious name for a company that's sending all this stuff to Russia? The company was called Shanghai H-Win. Come on, guys. Come on, guys. Call it something else. Call it anything but that. And not once did I ever think that China was not helping Russia in this invasion. Okay? Not once. Of course, we're not going to go outright and say it. And we're not going to cut ties with China right away. We trade so much with them as well. This is a very tough situation, because technically China is correct. Hey, we can't really say anything. Yeah, all right, you're trading things that I guess technically could be used for civilian application. However, it's a toughie. I don't know on this one. Qualifiers, we may hear more on China. Alrighty, qualifiers, thanks for catching episode 56 of Unqualified News. Like always, I'd like to take a minute or two to thank you. I appreciate it. This is more of a release for me. I love doing this. I love going to the news. This is like I've said in the past, like this is Candy Crush for me, you know, going through these articles and reading them. And once I'm here in front of the microphone and I've pressed record, it's like nothing else matters, you know. Even the neighbors nonstop talking on in the background doesn't matter. I really truly enjoy doing this, and I appreciate that you enjoy listening to it. Or even if you don't enjoy listening to it, maybe you're listening to it just out of curiosity, out of see how it sounds, see what I talk about. And if you're new to listening to Unqualified News, welcome. I haven't said it in a while. However, I'm sure you can tell that everything I say is down the middle. I'm 100%, And like I said, I don't really believe anything 100% either, which may be good or bad, but it really keeps me down the middle, and it keeps me very curious, and it keeps me wanting more information. And that's something that comes natural to me, and I'm very grateful for that, and which is why recording these episodes comes easy, though sitting down and actually doing it is the difficult part. Again, really appreciate the listen, and peace.